content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter for the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading selections from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig a little deeper into the May issue of Our State magazine, the theme of which features articles all about a mountain spring break. So we're headed to higher elevations. Roll down your windows and let the fresh mountain air take care of the rest. And our first article is from a little sub-theme called Taste of Spring. And this article is entitled Ramped Up. In western North Carolina, ramps are a rite of spring, a pungent mountain treasure whose rise from forest floor to fine dining honors the foodways of Appalachia. In the western North Carolina mountains, the way people talk about ramps hits at the spirit of Appalachia itself. Part folk medicine, part mischief, part elusive, wild mystery. The native allium, slips up through last year's leaf cover in early spring when the dirt starts to smell alive again, but the first Brandywine tomatoes are still a distant dream. Both my Appalachian grandfather, Clarence Lunsford, one of the many generations of my family who lived and died in Roanoke, Virginia, and Tennessee bacon maker Alan Benton have told me, tax day is ramp day. That phrase is resurrected in my mind every spring. Both men revered the pungent, garlicky flavor of ramps, which can be as stubborn as the hills themselves, serving as a reminder that winter doesn't get the last word around here. Clarence would eat ramps layered in ham sandwiches with copious amounts of butter, at least until my grandmother put a stop to that. Ramps grow in loose, secretive patches in deciduous highland forests, thriving as far north as Canada and as far west as Missouri and Minnesota, but they're most deeply associated with Appalachia. In the wilds around towns like Boone, Blowing Rock, and Banner Elk, they've become an iconic and somewhat infamous symbol of the region's rugged, resilient spirit. Their history as a spring tonic reaches back to the Cherokee and other tribes who foraged them when their leaves brought the first hint of green to the woods. Long before the corner pharmacy was a thing, they used the plant to treat croup and coughs and pressed its leaves into poultices to soothe the sting of bees and insects. Rich in vitamins and minerals, ramps were believed to strengthen the body after a long winter. They're just as capable of warding off colds as they are of fending off kisses. Early Appalachian settlers foraged them as well. They fried them with potatoes and bacon grease, really anything that might keep through the winter, folded them into cornbread, and stirred them into pots of beans. Ramps were handy flavoring agents, especially revered in places where spices were scarce. If nothing else, they're hard to ignore. Fiercely garlicky, almost sweet at the edges, they have a way of announcing themselves. And they stick around. Their odor clings to clothes, lingers in church pews, and follows children to school. It can take days to fully sweat them out. Where ramps hung around, the smell of chain oil and work boots, smokehouses and hard winters lingered as well. Over time, that tenacious scent became the butt of jokes and the stuff of neighborhood legends, an olfactory calling card that marked people like Clarence as belonging to the Hollers, and in some circles, as belonging to poverty. But on that last point, the ramps have had the final say. They're still a part of Appalachian folklore and celebrated in small-town festivals like Waynesville's Ramp Convention in early May. But they've also pushed through the margins and landed in top-tier kitchens, their aroma now drifting through dim rooms full of diners well-heeled enough to pay for what mountain families have been pulling up from the dirt for generations. That same plant that once got Appalachian kids teased is now the star of spring menus, a wild thing plated on designer pottery and paired with fine wines. Chefs like William Disson at the Marketplace in Asheville still pickle them. Others grill the bulbs, pressing those leaves into a beautiful char that pairs perfectly with a good steak. They're perhaps even better with mountain trout and a clutch of morel mushrooms, sautéed with fresh thyme and a generous knob of butter. They're elegant, folded into a rich, velvety soup with plenty of cream. Ramps and fat are, and always have been, great friends. Ramps are even a beautiful complement to sweet, rich lobster meat, which is a pairing that surely would have flummoxed my grandfather. Despite their passport into a fine dining era, ramps remain rooted in something far more grounded. They're still profoundly cherished by Appalachians as a symbol of the region's native foodways. They're still part of a heritage that once was a punchline and is now, increasingly, food influencer fodder. That's why old-timers like to remind online influencers who forage for social media clicks as much as for the thrill of the hunt that there's a respectful way to gather ramps. That means taking only what a hillside can spare, so the same patch will return next spring. That also means gently cutting the plant rather than ripping it out of the ground, leaving the roots to bring more ramps the following year. Because ramps aren't just something you eat. They're something you inherit. A taste of a place that lives in the memory of someone like my grandfather Clarence, heading into the woods at first light and coming home with dirt under his nails and a handful of leaves, the color of early spring, gone almost as soon as they arrive. And if you're interested in learning more about where to enjoy ramps, we've got a few little tidbits here for you. As spring flowers begin to bloom, a coveted allium overtakes Appalachia, if you know where to look. Here's how to enjoy our wild onions this season. You can eat them at Claywood in Hendersonville. Executive chef Tori Bogan works with large-scale foragers to obtain ramps for the restaurant's spring menu. Bogan also forages ramps alongside his brother, and if he finds a particularly good batch, he'll bring them to the restaurant and use the ramps en papillote, steamed with a smoked lemon butter in a brown paper bag that's torn open tableside, which co-owner Carly Bunton says obviously sells out quite pretty quickly. Then in Waynesville, you've got the Chef's Table. This restaurant's been serving farm-to-table fare for more than two decades. Throughout the spring, ramps occupy the spotlight, and employees have been known to field calls from customers who alert them to more ramp bounty. And they have a website, thechefstableofwaynesville.com. Back to Claywood in Hendersonville, they have a website as well. It's claywoodnc.com. Then moving on to Asheville, there's Chestnut. For a few special nights during ramp season, Chestnut unveils its three-course pre-feast ramp dinner, paired with wine, which features the garlicky bulb in every dish. Past menus have included pasta with ramp pesto, an asparagus ramp and burrata salad, and ramp sausage. Their website is chestnutasheville.com. If you want to buy some, the Owl Country Market in Canton has them. Fresh local fare finds a home at this family-owned country market that Chris Arrowwood reopened in 2011. Come late spring, you'll find sustainably harvested ramps from the surrounding area alongside the market's usual honey, eggs, meats, butter, liver mush, stone ground grits, and more. And they're on Asheville Highway in Canton, and they have a Facebook page. It's facebook.com/owll.produce. owll.produce on Facebook. Switching taste buds a little bit, this is called a sweet send-off. Before heading back down the mountain, discover edible riches in Boone. At the far end of a long bar, an espresso machine hisses as it sends up steam. Glass cases line the countertop, holding neat rows of handcrafted chocolates, solid chocolate flowers and sea salt caramels, toffee squares and pecan bark, and delicately decorated bonbons in more than a dozen flavors. When you step into Venture Chocolate and Wine Company from West King Street in downtown Boone, you're greeted by the sights and scents of that familiar, comforting pair, coffee and cacao. From the bar, the shop expands into a series of sections, a selection of olive oils and balsamic vinegars in silver dispensers, a tea bar, floor-to-ceiling bookshelves, a reading loft, and in the basement, a dimly lit wine and charcuterie bar. As you move through the space, the aromas change, but natural wood accents, seating nooks, warm spring light, and the low notes of Etta James, at last, draw together the 9,000 square feet. Venture began 14 years ago with Local Lion, the nearby coffee shop that Josiah and Meredith Davis opened in 2012. When the historic downtown Green and Wilcox building had an opening, which included space that once housed a barbershop and a music store frequented by Doc Watson, the owner asked the Davises to open a second Local Lion. Instead, Josiah proposed a shop focused on chocolate and wine. He'd recently discovered commonalities between roasting coffee and roasting cacao, and he and Meredith had become wine enthusiasts. He recruited Joshua Jolly, formerly Local Lion's head baker, and sent him to chocolate school. Venture opened its doors in 2022 with Jolly leading its chocolate program. Last October, it expanded into the space next door. Coffee, cacao, wine, olive oil, these are all products that have terroir, or provenance, Josiah says. Taste a Haitian chocolate bar inside a Ugandan bar, and they're going to taste different. Venture has terroir, too. Sitting at a bistro table overlooking downtown Boone as the spring leaves return, with a bright cherry almond bonbon and a dark chocolate square ridged with improbably soft toffee, you couldn't be anywhere else but here and now. To learn more about Venture Chocolate and Wine Company, look at their website, venturechocolateandwine.com. venturechocolateandwine.com. And now for another taste treat, In Search of the Mountain Cheeses. A curd connoisseur travels to the Blue Ridge to find the pastures, caves, and people shaping Western North Carolina's most memorable cheeses. And in the lead page, there's a milk cow who's looking our direction. Looks like a Jersey cow, brown eyes, and that honey-browned fur. Looking Glass Creamery relies on, actually that's Jersey cows, and Holstein cows for most of its cheeses, while Spinning Spider Creamery uses goat's milk in its distinctive creations. They have pictured here Smoky Bailey, Mountain Tome, Reeling Ruby, and Stackhouse. Stackhouse looks like it might be a blue cheese. It's got some streaks running through it. And then you've got the Smoked Bailey Mountain Tome. It's a pale cheese. And then the Reeling Ruby has a burgundy or a reddish, purplish topping to it. My name is Hannah Lee Leidy, and I'm a curd nerd. Cheese is my version of wine. I take it to dinner parties and gift it as birthday presents to deserving recipients. Like wine, cheese is my conduit for connection. If I like you, I'll give you cheese. If I love you, we'll share a board of it. Also like wine, every good cheese has a story behind it and a person who crafted it with care. I long thought the best cheeses came from exotic places like France and Wisconsin. But it turns out North Carolina's rolling out some pretty darn fine wheels of its own. Sadly, my home on the Outer Banks isn't a cheese-making hub. Early in my cheese journey, I would drive hours to Chapel Hill, specifically to peruse the cheese counter at Weaver Street Market. Who cared about Swiss Comté and English cheddar? I was after the butter-yellow wedges and saucer-sized wheels made in Chapel Hill, Climax, Marshall, and Columbus. I wanted to try them all, and I wanted to go to the source to see where the magic happened. I finally did. On a trip to Asheville with my mom, we set aside one afternoon for an adventure to Looking Glass Creamery in Columbus. We peeked into the rooms where cheese was being made and aging. We ordered a board laden with little wedges named for landmarks like the Green River and Bear Wallow Mountain, and ate it at a picnic table surrounded by blooming flowers and pasture land. Cows mooed in the distance. I felt like Heidi in the Alps. Looking Glass is one of the many cheesemakers crafting creamy delicacies throughout the Blue Ridge. But these products don't travel far. Few leave the state, and even fewer leave the county where they're made. But to find them, to try them, is to glimpse the creativity of this mountain community and get a literal taste of place. Last spring, I set out to learn more about the North Carolina cheesemakers and our far-flung hills and hollers, following winding roads and staking out local cheese shops that put hyper-local wheels in the spotlight. From conversations with cheesemakers and the people who sell their products, I discovered a striking reflection of grit and artistry, resourcefulness and passion that makes each piece all the more delicious. I know it sounds cheesy, but I'm way for it, and that way is spelled W-H-E-Y. So we're going to take a look at Looking Glass Creamery. A farmstead creamery continues a century-old tradition with cheeses that celebrate its mountain surroundings. As I turn off Interstate 26 onto U.S. Highway 74 toward Columbus, traffic all but disappears. The road narrows, two lanes twisting through Polk County, punctuated by the occasional puddle of early morning rain. By the time I park in front of Looking Glass Creamery's long, narrow building, painted with faces of Holstein and Jersey cows, their eyes peering curiously at visitors, the dissipating fog reveals acres of pasture land, and beyond that, shadowy Blue Ridge peaks. Jen Perkins steps out of the creamery, dressed in a long white cheesemaker's jacket, her hair pinned under a cap. I'm back to visit, and this time she's taking me behind the scenes to see the creamery in action. It's Thursday, cheesemaking day, and Jen's son Max has been at it since 6 a.m. The smell hits first. Fresh milk, damp earth, spring grass, and a briny funkiness. The sound hits next, the hum and whir of the pasteurizing machine, where massive metal paddles churn through a tank of milk. Looking Glass Creamery's model is entirely farmstead, meaning the Perkinses make cheese using milk from their own cows that graze right on the property. But that wasn't always their goal. We never thought of it as being a farmstead cheesemaker because it's like doing three jobs in one, Jen said. She and her husband, Andy, started Looking Glass Creamery in Fairview in 2009, sourcing milk from suppliers around Asheville. As demand for the product grew, so did the need to expand. They required more space and consistent supply of milk, and the best way to get that was with their own herd. She reached out to brothers Al and Doug Harmon, who owned Green Hill Farm in Columbus. Doug had mentioned bringing production onto the family's dairy farm, but unbeknownst to Jen, the Harmons had a bigger dream for the 226-acre property. They were ready to retire and wanted to ensure that it remained a dairy farm. Without children of their own to pass it on to, the Harmons needed the right stewards to lead it into the next chapter. The Perkinses bought the farm, plus its herd of cows, in 2017. As construction began on the production room and cheese shop, the Harmons built a house at the end of the driveway just across the street. Now they grow hay that feeds Looking Glass's cows. The larger facility allows Looking Glass to make as many as 9 different kinds of cheeses throughout spring, summer, and fall. They also built an adjoining cellar into the hillside behind the production room, where different types of cheeses interact with different types of mold in individual rooms. Yes, cheese needs mold. I follow Jen into the cheddar room and resist the urge to run my hand along the textured exterior of all the wheels, their fabric-like rinds growing more pronounced with each month that passes. There's Drover's Road, a sharp cheddar name for the people who used to drive cattle from the foothills to Charlotte, and Howard's Gap, which ages for up to 2 years. We moved into the Red Cellar, named for the orange and red mold that grows on the walls and deepens the colors in rinds of cheeses like the cocoa-rubbed Chocolate Lab. After I visited the caves, Andy walks with me to the farm store. It's barely lunchtime, but I need a grilled cheese before I go. The rain is back, so I zip up my jacket and take my sandwich under the covered patio, melted Drover's Road and Bear Wallow pudding beneath the bread. I chew in silence, listening to the drizzle on the sheet metal roof and nearby moos from happy cows, the perfect soundtrack for a cheese adventure. Now we'll head to Fairview to Blue Ridge Mountain Creamery. This mountain creamery embraces the natural landscape to create award-winning European-style cheeses. Victor Chiarica supervises the scene unfolding at the edge of his property, where I am, sitting in my car on the far side of a creek that rushes through where the driveway should be. In 2024, Hurricane Helene swept a torrent of water through the small road connecting Chiarica's home to his Blue Ridge Mountain Creamery, creating something of a moat at the property line. I punch the accelerator and my Subaru surges through the water. "I was wondering what kind of car you'd bring," Teresa says once I parked. Prior to Helene, the Blue Ridge Mountain Creamery regularly welcomed cheese fanatics like me. People would come see the cheese cave and commune over a table set with china plates for a tasting of Chiarica's European-style creations. The creamery has been closed for tours since the storm. Customers find Chiarica's cheese at the farmer's market in North Asheville and Black Mountain as he repairs his home and studio, where the cheesemaking happens. In front of Chiarica's studio paints a picture of his life as a glass blower. The colorful, contoured glasswork feels emblematic of his approach to cheesemaking. It's experimental, playful even. His first cheese, the Tome-style Ugly Baby, is one he joked only a mother could love, but it's a fan favorite. Another favorite is the Lexington Avenue Funk, an orange-tinged Taleggio with a savory, unctuous cream. He washes it in brines that vary from salted water to local cider. "People expect me to play around with different things," he says. He rotates through about 20 different cheese recipes, only occasionally tossing out a batch. Most of the time, they're quite edible. Chiarica doesn't have his own herd. Instead, he gets milk from Looking Glass Creamery and makes his cheeses in the studio's back wing, a scrubbed, sanitized space that stands in stark contrast to the rest of the building. He has two aging rooms. One holds a bloomy rind cheeses, like the Lexington Avenue Funk and Common Bear, a pudgy brie with a cottony white exterior. The other room is for blues, specifically 5-pound wheels of Ridge Blue, a chalky, butter-colored creation rippled with turquoise. The real intrigue of Blue Mountain Creamery sits outside the studio, on the other side of Chiarica's house. He is the only cheesemaker in North Carolina with a true cheese cave in his mountainside property, a freestanding earthen shelter more commonly seen in France and Italy. He researched, he read. One day he grabbed a friend's backhoe and started digging it out the side of the mountain. I follow Chiarica through a hobbit hole door sheltered by ferns and branches, and we enter the cave, an actual cave, dark, quiet, and humid. Inside, shelves of Ugly Baby and 20-pound wheels of naked cheddar age on wooden planks around the room. Curds wrapped in cheesecloth dangle from wooden beams. Soon, they'll become provolone. Cave aging cheese embraces many elements beyond the maker's control. Humidity, seasonal changes, wild bacteria. It's risky, but that's part of the fun for Chiarica. "With cheese caves, you have to partner with Mother Nature," he says. During Hurricane Helene, this partnership became his insurance. When the floodwaters rose throughout Fairview and debris filled his home, studio, and the aging rooms, destroying his inventory ahead of fall and winter markets. After the waters subsided, Chiarica went to the cave expecting the worst. But inside, nearly 1,000 pounds of cheese sat undisturbed. It was a thin silver lining amid the devastation. But for Chiarica's business, this small benevolence allowed Blue Ridge Mountain Creamery to survive while he rebuilt everything. He's not quite returned to wholesale, and I ask how I can buy his cheese. For now, local farmers markets Black Mountain and North Asheville are as far as they'll go. I don't mind. A delicious destination is enough justification for one more journey. Next, we'll visit Spinning Spider Creamery in Marshall. One creamery's locally loved cheeses started with the owner's devotion to her herd. The brown wax paper crackles as I unwrap 5 different cheeses and arrange them on a plate. I'm back home in my kitchen, and I couldn't leave the mountains without stopping at South Slope Cheese Company in Asheville. The shop sells cheeses from makers throughout North Carolina and Appalachia, esoteric products I haven't seen anywhere else in the state. I shave off slivers and sample each in slow succession, guessing which might be cow's milk, goat, or a blend. I keep coming back to the milky white cheese with a deep brown rind. It's firm, nutty, almost like a Gruyere without the characteristic hay yellow color. The rind has been rubbed with cocoa and spices. I flip the wax paper. Liesel, an Alpine-style goat cheese from Spinning Spider Creamery. I was unfamiliar with the creamery prior to visiting South Slope Cheese Company. We have a customer who comes in every week and gets the largest chunk of Spinning Spider cheese, no matter what it is, the owners tell me. No more convincing needed. I promptly added Spinning Spider feta, garlic dill chev, and Liesel to my basket. Turns out the creamery was one of the first established cheesemakers in western North Carolina. The story starts with a goat named Bluebell. Owner Chris Owen's son, Cullen, received the kid through the local 4-H program. He raised her, and she birthed kids that went on to other 4-H participants. She lived a grand, long life, Owen tells me over the phone. Cullen would come outside talking, and she would hear him and start bleeding back. Bluebell changed the family's trajectory. Owen started making cheese with the goat's milk, soft chevres her children would eat. She learned from cookbooks and experimented on her kitchen stove. Owen took her cheese to the Marshall Farmers Market and realized her home hobby had business potential. Their goat herd grew, and Owen scaled the recipes, expanding into bloomy rind and hard cheeses like the buttery camembert-style Camille and nutty Liesel. Like Looking Glass Creamery, Spinning Spider's model is farm-fed, and they sell goat's milk to other cheesemakers. The Owens produce enough for wholesale, and their cheese is sprinkled throughout Asheville restaurants, markets, and shops. Yet the creamery remains exclusively family-owned and operated. I remember Jan Perkins' comment about farmstead cheesemaking being like three jobs in one, and I asked Owen about this. Kidding season is crazy. For a few weeks each spring, she and her family deliver about 15 baby goats a day. This is on top of milking the herd, bottle feeding the newborns, making cheese, and getting orders out the door. There are times when I have four does in labor and three sets of triplet by the house in the wood stove to keep warm. When do you sleep? I ask. We don't. After we hang up the phone, I give quiet thanks to Owen, Poker Face, and their shared reminder that there's still so much cheese left to try. We've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. We hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll join us next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Again, that's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.